Can just talk a little bit about what you brought today, your story. You want to talk about harm reduction?
What'd you bring today, Susan?
Small drinks.
We have drinks.
No, I'm supposed to have special adult beverages. So I brought, I think probably the only surviving original Streetworks bag. Streetworks was a street outreach collaborative that formed in 1993, I think.
Mm-hmm.
93. I don't even remember how many organizations were involved.
I think there was six, maybe it was nine.
I don't even remember at this point. I'd have to really think hard. And back in the day, it was a pretty special and transformative thing to the community of people providing services to homeless kids. And for a long time before there was actual legal exchange, outreach workers were clandestinely carrying needles in their bags and exchanging them, and condoms, and you know, all sorts of harm reduction related tools and tricks
and education and normalizing stuff for people and meeting people
kits.
Where they were at. And
that really dates us, doesn't it? Bleach kits,
right? Well, exactly. And also lots of information. I mean, Hep C wasn't really on the radar, but people were still dropping dead like crazy from AIDS, and, you know, all of that was in motion, and a lot of the services were based around, quote-unquote, who deserved help and who didn't.
Yeah. And sober to access.
And there was a huge pushback, or you had to be a good person, quote-unquote. And so, you know, if you were in the sex industry, or if you were in all these different realms, you didn't fit, and you were endangered, or the workers put you in danger while you're trying to survive but didn't have alternatives for you. And Streetworks was really active in creating environments where that didn't happen, and where people were truly met where they were at and empowered to make their own choices and how to improve their lives.
And sponsored harm reduction training for youth workers
everywhere,
you know, all over the
and
state.
And fought for it, because it was not. Like, now it's this accepted best practice and blah, 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 and it's all evidence-based, and then it wasn't. Like, people believed in the tough love practice and, you know, all this other stuff that was real punitive and ineffectual.
I got in trouble with our MDH HIV prevention contract manager for saying it out loud at a conference one time. Yeah, Gary Ramaphetti pulled me aside. Don't you ever say that word again.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Was Streetworks based in the Twin Cities here?
Okay. It was the first of its kind in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how did both of you get involved with harm reduction in Minnesota in particular?
Because it just made sense.
Yeah.
I think Gail Thomas, who should be here at some point.
Yeah.
You know, I had lots of conversations with her, and then Lil Rosemary dragged me to Harm Reduction Coalition conference in Oakland, and
I came into it where I had my own history of being, I was a street kid and I was homeless for a long time, and I had very little interest in receiving services, so I was quote unquote, like I was a bad service recipient. I wasn't interested in being mainlined into housing. I didn't trust them. I didn't think that they held their word. I was part of the collective that started the Hard Times Cafe, when we had a lot of connection with homeless communities and a lot of connection with people who were involved with the intervened in drug communities. A lot of our own members, people would pass away either from AIDS or ODs or whatever. So part of it came just from being part of that community. And when I turned 23, I met Jesse Cebeda, who used to do outreach at Hard Times. And I was working a second job at First Avenue at the time. And he tried to offer me candy or condoms, and I said, I don't want either one of those. I want a job I don't fucking hate. And he got me an application to apply to be a case manager for Safe House, which I was completely unqualified for. And I interviewed, and they ended up hiring me as an on-call person and started training me, and that was where I was introduced to the formal idea of harm reduction.
Who's there?
You didn't. Pam did.
Really?
Yeah.
And then I met you. I heard about you. Like, you scared me.
Yeah.
They had to explain to me what gangster rap was, because I just thought it was music. They were trying to tell me what inappropriate music was, and I didn't know. Yeah. Pam was trying to, she only liked country western. Which I was like, she's like, you can't play inappropriate music. And I was like, what the hell is inappropriate music? And the guy was like, she means gangster rap. I was like, okay. Yeah, so, but then I met Susan, who at the time was the director of that program, and I'd heard about her, but she scared me.
Before you met me?
Yeah, of course. Oh, they were like, and she went and did the Peace Corps in Costa Rica, and she's this big hula-la deal, and she can speak multiple languages, and la-la-la-la-la. And then I saw this chick walked up, and she's bald. I thought she was punk rock. She had a little stocking cap on, little combat boots, and she was holding the hand of this little teeny beautiful girl who was like 4 years old. Emily, who's her daughter.
Younger.
Was she? So,
two.
Oh yeah. Little teeny teeny thing. And she just took up space. Like, it was beautiful. And she was funny, and she encouraged people to question things and to question politics, and she was just rad. I was like, she still scares me, but I love her. You did. What? You gotta remember one of the first times you were there, the super pissed off kid that went and told his case manager I pushed him down the stairs, and what I did was walk by him with a bag of garbage. Yeah. And I was like, I brand new, like I was totally scared I was gonna get fired. And she was like, nope, not what happened. Because she was standing there, so I was like, so, but over time, I, you know, it was a place where I really got to learn about harm reduction, learn about that aspect of it, and really see it be, I'm an experiential learner, so I did it to myself before I did it to anyone else, and that's where I found it to be profoundly effective.
And what's interesting is that now when I have questions about sort of harm reduction strategies, she's my go-to person to call.
I love it. I'm bizarro about it. Because it's been the thing that makes the most sense and is the most flexible and effective. And I've been this way. I got that job when I just turned 23 and I'm 46 now. So.
Yeah, Emily's 25.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, I've had to be a harm reductionist as a parent, too, because you can't be one thing at your work life and one thing at home, which has been interesting, to say the least, and in part, not because it's hard to practice harm reduction, but because I end up getting judged by other parents who don't think that my strategies or what I let my kids do and encourage them not to do is appropriate. And find out, you know, like from one of Emily's peers, from a mom that I ran into in another context, that, oh yeah, I always thought that you were buying drugs for the kids. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was. Yeah. So, yeah,
I don't know. That's how I got involved.
And all the things I ever learned at harm reduction conferences, you know, like when people start talking about crack babies, I'm like, actually, the placenta absorbed most of the crack cocaine, and what those children were suffering from was malnutrition, you know? So I get to lay wisdom on people from things that I've learned at harm reduction conferences over the years. Yeah. Yeah.
So, can you talk a little bit about what has changed over your years working with harm reduction?
Well, I don't work in the social service sort of industry anymore. But I can say in my final years there's a lot of people in this town that claim that they're practicing harm reduction and aren't. So I think
it's a buzzword phase.
It's become a buzzword, and everybody says they're doing it. And I think the number of people who truly comprehend deeply what it means to be a harm reductionist has shrunk. And I mean, I think part of it is the needle exchange isn't there to sort of be sort of the central clearinghouse of those ideas. And yeah, I don't know. I think even the Street Works Collaborative, I would say that there's not much harm reduction practiced in that context, maybe by individual people. But, well, and I think it's also the, you know, as more funders and more there's more and more stuff on there, there's less opportunity. Harm reduction takes time. You know, you need time and you need to be able to build rapport and you need, and you can also do it on the fly, sure. But to really be effective with it, it takes time and space. And people have to learn to trust that time and space. And that is what is not appear to be available.
Yeah.
Especially within organizations. There just isn't
the time and space. People are really big caseloads or
got 3 months to fix things that took 20 some years to, you know, manifest.
Right. Or even you're only housing in this context, or you're only blah blah in this context, and so there isn't. Yeah, there, and it's becoming more constricted right now. I think that's common whenever we people get scared, or we have more conservative governments, people get scared,
right?
And they contract and tighten up, and I've seen that a few times over the years. But I've also, you know, there seems to be, I see less true community participation than there used to be. It's been kind of professionalized out. And part of that makes it easier and palatabler for the funders and less effective. Because if they say, oh yeah, I took that class on harm reduction, then I just, that's not enough.
But I also think, we have always lived in the land of 10,000 treatment centers, so there's still this 12-step orientation to the world that we've always had to fight against. And then I think that the safe harbors stuff, helping people who are being sex trafficked thing helped continue strengthen the pervasive attitude that all sex work is bad and exploitive, and so there's no way to insert, or less of a way to insert, harm reduction strategies into working with people who are involved in the sex industry or involved in sex trade, because it's all perceived as bad.
Well, and again, too, I think it also is good intentions without a deeper understanding of the effects when you look at safe harbor stuff. When you're 14 years old, you shouldn't have to sleep with someone as old as your grandpa if you don't want to. Like, that's in all of those processes. But I also feel like,
if you're 35 and making bank.
Well, and if that's
with your webcam,
Well, exactly. Yeah. What are you defining as traffic? What are you defining as? I like the safe harbor laws and decriminalizing that, especially for the young people, and so they don't have to wear these labels. I don't like that, there are rumors that there are shelters that won't take girls that are angry. Like, really? How are you supposed to be coming out of traffic if you've been trafficked? You should be pissed as hell and light the world on fire.
Right.
Put her ass in a karate class, for real. Let her pump some stuff. It's the urge to simplify things that aren't simple. And harm reduction lets things be complicated and lets people work on things and improve and experience mastery where they can and as they're ready to. And I think that's the brilliance of harm reduction. So,
I know.
Yeah, I agree. Wholeheartedly. You can pet me anytime.
Thank you. Find it soothing. We don't need that one.
We know each other too well.
Really? Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to say about harm reduction or your work with Street Works?
I just think that because I had a harm reduction perspective when I entered into relationships with young people, there are young people with whom I am still, they're not young anymore, they're 30-something, right? But I think about, Judy. Not sure where she is. She's still in contact with Camille, though, and Camille updates me from time to time. Here's someone who, if we had approached working with her from a traditional sort of perspective, we would have lost her a long time ago. you know, or Crystal,
who's now a successful youth worker.
I thought she was a chef. Diamond? Trans Diamond.
No, I know you, man.
She just finished culinary school.
Oh,
Paris youth worker.
That's not who I was thinking of. Oh. I was thinking of Crystal, not Diamond.
Oh.
Who is it that went and has been working with the Safe Harbor stuff?
Not, I don't know.
Anyway, not the point.
Yeah. Harry. Yeah. But if we had insisted that they change in order to access services and stay changed in order to keep receiving services, we would have lost track of them a long time ago, and they might be dead.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So, how did you get involved with this program? This project?
I've been working with Professor Sullivan, and so she asked me to be her transcriptionist. So I've been transcribing oral histories of mothers of users, and then also she's gone more into harm reduction recently. So I've been learning about things through that. So I'm like,
this is insane.
Yeah. Just type it away. So,
that's
yeah.
Awesome. Uh-huh. That's awesome.
And what does she teach?
So history at McAllister College. So she teaches a course on addiction. She teaches like race, gender, and medicine, which is the course I had with her. So like focused on like women's studies and history and how those intersect. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
I'm going to go to McAllister and teach a class about pirates. Can I do that?
If anybody could. I don't see why not. That's some good source material.
I borrowed that book once. You're the reason that I have this thing about pirates. It's all your fault.
It's okay. You're the reason I have a thing about harm reduction. I'm all your fault.
All right.
Only fair. Is there anything else that you need from us?
I don't think so. Thank you so much.
Okay.
It was great talking.